Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for always tuning into the show. It's another great show we got lined up for you. I cannot wait to get to my guest today. The thing about this show is I always try to talk to people that are relevant. I try to talk to people that are doing stuff. I try to talk to people that have a great story. I try to talk to people that are positive. And this guy that I'm interviewing today is definitely all that. He goes by the name of Bentley Kyle Evans. He's a producer, he's an actor, he's a creator, and he's one of them dudes. And we're sharing a network right now. He's got a show on Bounce TV, and he has a show on TV One. This guy is doing it simultaneously, getting it in. So I'm just a fan and a friend as well. And let's not just talk about what he's doing now. We're going to talk about what he did as well. He's just one of those guys, and I'm a fan. You'll be a fan if you're not already a fan. So stay right there. This is Rodney Perry. You're tuned in to Rodney Perry Live. Up next, Mr. Bentley Kyle Evans.
Chloe's the princess.
I don't know heavy fist. You are throwing a heavy fist first. Next.
Brooks the hot mess.
It's Saturday morning. I need my fat girl breakfast Saturday morning.
Two broke girls keeping it 100.
I went full on Jack Nicholson shining on y'all, my back.
From the producer of Martin and the Jamie Foxx Show.
I'm putting my face on. I would pick a better face if I was you.
My Crazy Roommate, an all-new original series, premiering Monday, October 14th on the new Bounce TV Our Way.
You know what time it is. Your boy Rodney Perry is coming to a city near you. That's right, a city near you. Go to my website, www.rodneyperry.com. www.rodneyperry.com. That's right, the Black Tour is coming your way. And it's dark skin, dog. Yeah, it sounds like Tommy. I'm sorry, Tommy. Yeah.
Want to know why it didn't last 5 hours? I disproved the theory of relativity. I mastered origami while beating the record for hacky sacking. Found Bigfoot. Swam the English Channel. And then I swam back. And then I took the dogs for a walk. How do I do all this? 5 hour energy. Hours of energy now with no crash later.
Underlay!
Are you ready for more laughs, a new stage, and more Rodney Perry? Well, the wait is almost over. That's right, Off the Chain is coming back this fall on Bounce TV. Bounce TV, TV, our way.
If you're looking for the latest in comedy, news, and entertainment, the only place to go is the Humor Mill. Check out the website, humormillmag.com. Humor Mill, the only place for comedy, news, and entertainment. I see you, Frank.
And I would do anything for love. Oh, I would do anything for love. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that, or that, or this, and no, nothing, definitely nothing. It hurts, but I kinda like it.
Hey, y'all, it's your boy Rodney Perry, and we are back in full effect. Thank you for always tuning in. Appreciate y'all for kicking it with me. And thank you for your emails. You can always hit me up. I'm at my email, Rodney@RodneyPerry.com, Rodney@RodneyPerry.com. If you want to talk about the show, if you want to just say hi, if you want to book me, you can hit me up, Rodney@RodneyPerry.com. And, you know, we're going to continue to bring y'all the best shows that we can. And that's really what it's all about for us. We're a small organization, but we've been getting it in. We've done over, what, Matt, like 400 shows, and the shows are getting better and better and better. And now it's time for me to bring in my guest for the day, man. This guy I'm completely a fan of, had an opportunity to work one of his shows, Love That Girl, where it's just one of the best sets I've ever been on. You know, it's really light. The energy is great. And he really creates a space that allows you to be funny. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, let me bring on Mr. Evans. You know, I mean, you got to earn the right to be calling people Bentley. You go, Mr. Evans, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bentley, Kyle Evans. What's up, sir?
What's going on, Rob? How you doing, big time?
Man, first of all, thank you so much for making some time, man, to come on and chat with us. You got more going on. They about to start saying Tyler Perry who?
Well, you know, I mean, I hope that they do. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this a little bit longer than Tyler, but, you know, he's getting accolades right now. But it's time to move over and let somebody else shine.
IB, now, we're definitely going to talk about everything you got going on now. My crazy roommate on Bounce TV, Love That Girl on TV One. But take me back, man, because you were part of two of the shows that are part of the fabric of black comedy in the Jamie Foxx show and the Martin Lawrence show. Like, take me back to the creative process in those two shows.
Well, okay. Well, we'll start with Martin. And, you know, I just got to tell you, man, the Martin show was probably the best experience of my life. It was like college for me. It was, you know, it was that thing where you're learning how to do the business on that show, but at the same time, you're putting out quality comedy. And we had no idea that show was going to become the hit that it is now.
Right.
But, the creative process was pretty simple with that show, in that Martin, you know, being a successful stand-up comic, we were able to pretty much just take right from his comedy act and just kind of build a show around that, and then adding in the Beauty and the Beast scenario where you got your downtown guy and a pretty girl from uptown.
Right.
And pretty much, you know, making it to where opposites attracted. And so it was then it was just like taking bits and pieces and elements of my life, other writers' lives that were going through similar lifestyles as the Martin and Gina characters were at that time. So it was just kind of easy to just kind of spitball what was really going on and, you know, just put that on the paper.
Man, you guys put it on the paper so well. Martin's physicality. Did you ever have to, as a showrunner, did you ever have to squeeze that out of him, or did that just jump out of him?
I gotta be honest, man. It just came out of him. I mean, you give him something on paper, and he might look at it and go, "I'm not really feeling it. I don't see it." And you may have to give him a little nudge and say, "Well, what if you saw it like this?" And kind of give him an idea where to go, and then from that point on, he would take it to a whole another level. Like Dragonfly Jones, come on, man. You can't write that.
You cannot write that stuff, man. Oh, this such great characters, man. Man, like you say, Bentley, like when you were in it, you're living it. You guys didn't really know. So what's it like now, two decades almost later, to look back and it still be, I mean, it's really hard for some of the newer shows to have Martin running in reruns behind you because he's getting higher ratings still.
I know, it's crazy. I mean, I'm thankful that at least the characters didn't have big afros and everything, so we'd be outdated right now.
Right.
But it's just a timeless show, man. It was a classic time. It was time for America to embrace a young black male that was just basically saying, "What's up?" And that's like the first time that had ever been done in the history of television, where you just take this around-the-way guy and, you know, and make light of him. And then when you look back at it, everybody can relate to the show because we've all been young and wild and crazy. And so you look back and watch those episodes, it's like watching old episodes of I Love Lucy. And I tell you, Rodney, the coolest part is watching them with Marty. When I'm up at his house and we just turn on the show and just trip off of it, it's like surreal.
Right, because y'all lived that.
We lived it, and then it's like to go back and relive it. And I ask him sometimes, what were you thinking right then and there? And he'll go, I was just thinking, I got a shot. I'm going for mine right now in every second.
Wow. Wow. Martin ran from 92 to 97. Jamie Foxx ran from 96 to 2001. So you had an overlap there where you were doing both of the shows?
Yeah, man. I was, I was 29 years old, man. And I was running two totally different shows for two different networks simultaneously. And the good thing for me was that Universal Studios, where we did Martin, was right across the street from Warner Brothers. So it's like I could just, you know, take a golf cart and dip from one studio to the next studio. And, I mean, it was taxing, man. It was a grueling schedule. But I was able to pull it off, man. And like I said, I was under the age of 30, and I didn't know what I was getting into, but, you know, I made it work. We did 27 episodes of Martin that year, and we did 22 episodes of Jamie Foxx that year.
Man, that's crazy. And give my audience this, because I don't think people understand when you say I was running two shows. To be a showrunner, the network has to trust you. Like, what was your pedigree that they decided to trust you for Martin?
You know what? It's funny, man, because when I came in to the Martin show, I didn't have a pedigree. I'm proud to say, but then I'm not proud to say that I don't have a college degree. I didn't go to school for this.
Mm-hmm.
I just learned it. I was a TV kid, so I just understood the ebb and the flow of what TV is. And then, you know, working with Martin and the executives being able to see that I had a relationship to where I could relate to him. And pretty much, he and I got along so well to where it was like, you know what, he trusts this guy. And if he trusts him, then we have to learn to trust him. And so, you know, they gave me a shot to try it. They bumped me up to a high-ranking producer in the fourth season. And then in the fifth season, they say, hey, you got it. So we're going to trust you and take the gloves off and let you do what you do. And we were able to, like I said, do it remarkably.
Man, I've talked to Carl Payne on this show. I've talked to Tommy Ford, and you know they all speak to that time being so much fun. Man, what's your biggest reflection on that time?
It was a lot of fun, and you know what's crazy is you know we were on the Universal Studios lot, so you know you got the tour that's on the lot as well. So it was like working in a playground. It's like at lunchtime, you're taking all your friends up on the tour, and you ride. You know, it's like a bunch of youngsters just riding around on golf carts. And then the crazy thing about the Martin show, everybody who was in L.A. celebrity-wise wanted to come by. So you
right.
You got a 12-year-old Usher standing on stage, I remember, and Halle Berry came by, Richard Pryor came through there. I got to meet Richard,
Wow.
I mean, Jackie Chan and just all the different guest stars that came through there. We were able to break Tyrese, who gave him his first TV appearance, and we broke Snoop Dogg and also Biggie Smalls on the show.
Wow. That's amazing,
you know,
man.
So, yeah.
Now, speak to me to this. Now, Martin Lawrence is one talent. Jamie Foxx is a different talent, although super talented. What was the difference in them for you as a showrunner?
Two different guys, completely different guys, man. And, you know, right, I think you know both of them. But I tell you, Jamie is the complete polar opposite of Martin. He is all about the good time. You know, Martin's more focused and dedicated to the craft. Jamie's like, look, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be fun. So he's going to make sure the party's there every night, the girls are there, And so it was always big energy at the Jamie Foxx show. It didn't feel like work. It just felt like a big party going on. But as far as, you know, working with Jamie's talent, I mean, the dude's so multi-talented as far as music, you know, his joke-telling ability, his physicality. It was, you know, it was a whole different animal for me to take on. You know, with Martin, we were doing multi-characters all the time. With Jamie, it was
right.
just, you know, a big ensemble cast, but it was clearly written around around him. So,
yeah.
you know, it was a much bigger difference. I think Jamie probably trusted me a little bit more than Martin did in the beginning because I had, you know, a pedigree by that time. So
right.
he, you know, he trusted my vision, and he kind of went with what I thought was right. And so we always had a great working relationship.
I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and he's in a writing situation. He's a writer on a show right now, and he was speaking to me about, you know, having a network come in and make suggestions that didn't make sense and stuff like that. He was kind of just kind of spilling his guts. Speak to what that is, because I don't think the average Joe Blow gets an inkling of what it's like being a showrunner and for you to have one thing on paper and this guy that's never written a day in his life go, no, why don't y'all do it this way?
You know what it's like? I'll give you a couple of explanations, but the number one analogy is like, you know, Michael Jordan knows how to play basketball. But then Phil Jackson comes in and gives him notes and critiques. Well, you know, it's nothing that Phil Jackson can do to make Michael Jordan a better basketball player. But it's not interference, but it's just that extra added help that you might need to get to that next level. But now, sometimes you get negatives and sometimes you get positives because sometimes the network execs are really, really intelligent. And they really, really know comedy, and they
mm-hmm.
you know, have a really good understanding of it. But then sometimes you get people that are just there for job justification, and you know, they kind of come in and throw in their ideas because they want to be producers, and
mm-hmm.
they just screw everything up, man. And
wow.
you know, there's nothing more annoying than when you've spent a lot of time coming up with a joke or a scenario or something like that, and then a network exec comes in and basically throws his or her weight around and says they don't like it. And so then you got to make all these changes. And, of course, you're doing it begrudgingly because you're mad that you have to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, you get a lot, you know, as the showrunner, you have to make the decisions, but then it's always a constant fight with the network. And I believe that the network officials and executives are trying to always make it better. But sometimes you kind of feel like you don't need their interference in order to do your best work.
Got it. Hey, you guys, it's Roddy Perry. You're tuning in to Roddy Perry Live. We're talking to Mr. Bentley Kyle Evans. Of course, you know him from Martin Lawrence fame, or you know him from Jamie Foxx fame, but this man is continuously creating. And that's one of the things that I'm mostly impressed about, Bentley, is you continue to create and create good shows, man. Love That Girl is a really good show, and Family Time. Now, can I tell the Family Time story?
Yeah.
I get a call, you know, and Bentley called me, and if Bentley call you, it's like now. Like, it's not like, hey, man, next month we do it. No, it's like right now. Yo, Rod, man, we doing this thing, man. I want you to do it. I think you'll be great playing this dad. Blah, blah, I need you tomorrow. I'm like, B, I can't do it, man. All right, I'm going to hit you back. I was like, oh, man, I knew I blew it. But I love Oh My Good, and I think he's great for that show. And I just wanted to work with Angel, really. I just wanted to rub on Angel, but that's another story. But anyway, You continue to create these great scenarios. What's your responsibility? Like, is there something in Bentley Kyle Evans that say I wanna show and tell our stories better? Is that your frame of mind?
Yeah, you know what? It's you know, it's our duty, man. It's you know, the big networks, the ABC, CBS's, and Fox, and the NBC's, they're not giving us an opportunity right now to tell our stories. And I believe that that's going to swing around in a very short order of time. But right now, you know, while you got a beautiful black family living in the White House and our stories aren't being told, I think it's a travesty. So
right.
I believe that it's my responsibility to continue to create scenarios where, you know, a different viewing audience can see the different light of black people. I mean, look, we are what I put on my shows. We are, sometimes we're super intelligent, sometimes we're super ignorant. Sometimes we're big, we're small, we're, you know, it's so many different elements of black people, and we got to embrace who we really are and just love who we are. I mean, everybody got that cousin. You know what I'm talking about?
Everybody got that cousin.
Everybody got that cousin, man. And so, you know, I like to bring those colors to life, man, and constantly continue to put the pen to the paper while they'll allow me to. And right now, you know, with Bounce and with TV One, two outlets that are allowing, you know, me to continue to put my vision out there and script in a scripted form, I'm just thankful, man, that we can keep, that it can keep going and, you know, and blow up. And I got to do something. I want to do something with you, which is, you know, family time just wasn't, it wasn't the time for you and I to do it. But I feel like you and I should put something together, man, because you are truly talented, man. And I've been wanting to work with you for a minute.
Wow. Well, you know what, B, on the real, no bullshit, I will work with you in a heartbeat because I see what you do, man. Just to be on the set, I got an opportunity to do an episode of Love That Girl, and to be on the set, I'm all about energy. And you truly conduct business in a no-bullshit zone, which I think is very dope. Family Time hit. We see it on Bounce. Then it made the segue over to TV One. And now I Love That Girl. You got characters, man, that's so rich. This Breisha Webb, is she the Steve Urkel of our generation, this new generation?
You know what? She's a little bit of look, Breisha Webb's got so many levels, man. Rodney, she has the ability. First of all, I'm not gonna pigeonhole her as Urkel because I think Urkel did one thing great.
Yeah.
But I think Breisha has so many different levels, and you'll see that this season she's singing. I didn't even know she had a great
wow.
singing voice. She can sing. She can dance. She's classically trained, and she's sexy. She's super hot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you look at her, you go, "Oh, okay. I'm unique, but I like the little tight fit she got on." You know
I know,
I mean?
Right? Yeah.
And then when you see Breisha, you're like, "This Breisha, you know, Breisha's a cutie pie, right?" But then you're like, "This, put that wig on, girl. Put that wig on again and walk across that stage." You know what
yeah.
I mean? She's got that little sex appeal, and it's the first time you've seen the hood chick in a position of being able to carry a show. And I'm telling you, she can carry a show.
Oh, she's definitely doing her thing, and it was awesome to see her work up close. And then you got my man Alfonso McCauley, who is – I'm such a fan of this guy. I remember he used to come down to a Christian comedy spot. Myself, Cat Williams, we were all doing comedy at a place called Stepping Up right in Inglewood, which is like it's a Roscoe's now. But we used to do comedy over there in that spot, and he was just a kid. He would come down and crack his little church jokes, and we was like, man, this kid has something. And to fast forward years later and see him as a man on this show, and his evolution is just incredible.
Yeah, man, Fonz, he's got something real, real special. I always put it out there. I said, if they ever decide, and I know they've been talking about it, but if they ever decide to do that Richard Pryor story, they need to consider him because he looks like a
wow.
young Richard Pryor. Think about Richard Pryor and Ladies
wow.
and Blues. And,
that's
and,
crazy,
you know, young
dude.
Richard,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And
he's got the acting chops.
Yeah, he got the acting chops. I mean, this dude can do it. He's super funny. And what I like about it, he has the same abilities that Will Smith had on The Fresh Prince to just kind of break out, do his little ad libs, but stay within the confines of the script. And I let him go. I believe in letting actors do what they do, man.
Man, you are definitely letting them go. That show, executive produced by the great Martin Lawrence and Tatiana Ali, but you guys went through a facelift for this season. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, it's a real simple. I mean, you know, the cool thing about it is Todd is still a producer on the show. Love her very much. But, you know, just like any other actor, you know, we were down on a hiatus. TV1 had us on a hiatus period where we were down for about a year. And in that time, you know, actors got to eat. So she ended up going in and auditioning for this show, Second Generation Wayans, for BET. And she got the role and everything. So that was beautiful for her. And then, you know, once we got the green light to come back with TV1, it was just a conflict, I think, with her contract, where she couldn't. I think she had a non-compete clause in there from between BET and TV1 because they're competitive networks. So, you know, we had to push on and do the show without her. But she was totally cool with it, and we talked about it, and she's as far as I'm concerned, she's all for the life of the show, and I hope that you know that we'll be friends forever. So it's just one of those things, one of those scenarios. We were a little unhappy about it, but I think the show this year blossomed into something that we didn't expect. And bringing in Reagan Gomez, you know, it just kind of opened it up to a whole new show.
Wow. And like I say, man, such a great set to be on. Now you know we got to talk about My Crazy Roommate. It's on Bounce TV, and I've never seen Bounce advertise anything like they're running this show. You know, they're doing national commercials. The network is growing. The network is blowing up. I have a show over.
The party ain't over, baby. More Rodney Perry Live. We come back. You don't want to miss it. The party ain't over, baby. More Rodney Perry Live, we come back. You don't want to miss it. Hey, y'all, stay right there. We come back. More Rodney Perry Live.
Let me tell y'all something. Y'all don't know nothing about what we're about to do. We got some great things coming down the pipe. I'm developing a game show that's in the process of, you know, really taking off. So I'll keep letting y'all know little tidbits about that as we get it out to the world. But that's coming down the pipe. And also, man, I got to say thank you. All of you guys that continue to support us, and we're easy to find. So you guys are always hitting us up, whether it be Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. You guys have been awesome, and we can't do it without you. Now, with that, I'm going to bring on my guest today. He's been patient enough to wait for me. But this is the thing. There are a few people personally for Rodney Perry that, how do I say this? They've been instrumental in my journey personally. This is one of those guys. He allowed me to share the airways with him. He's just a dynamic brother. He's everything you want to be in a celebrity that's not a celebrity. So we're going to get in there and cover all that. Ladies and gentlemen, he's an author. He's a father. He's just a cool-ass dude on so many levels. And he's dressed to the nines. He keep a fly, funky, fresh fade. He's from my hometown, Chicago, Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, my friend, Mr. Michael Bazin. What's up, Mike?
I am smiling like a proud papa right now. What's up, Rodney? How you doing, man?
Man, I got to tell you, Mike, man, first of all, thank you. Thank you for the years you gave us of your time, your family's time on the radio. And, dude, like, you are such an inspiration. Like, there's still a huge void left in radio without you. You know that, right?
Thank you, partner. I appreciate that. I don't think about the void too much because I don't listen to radio. I didn't listen to radio prior to starting radio. I don't listen to radio now that I'm off of radio. I'm pretty much too busy working and mentoring. But I appreciate what you're saying. I get that from a lot of people. I want the guys in the afternoon to be successful. but I want them to be successful given a quality show. I thought I set a standard, and obviously I like to see that standard upheld, man, but thank you for that.
Let me tell you something. It's some big shoes sitting at the end of that bed, and a lot of people can't fit them.
No man. Comment. No comment, Brian. No comment.
Hey, I already know, Mike. I'm not going to get into it, but I had to address the elephant in the room. But this is the – and I know you wouldn't have it no other way. You know, that's one thing I think that resonated with you personally is you really were never afraid to attack those subjects, whether it be, you know, Genesis 6. Was there ever any fear, were you ever afraid to tackle certain things on your show?
Never. I tell you, the most fearful experience I had was when we did the Genesis 6 march. My mother came down. Other people brought their children down. And I was so afraid that something would happen, you know, something negative would happen and it would all come back on me because if people got hurt or someone got killed, it would be my march, you know, because we spearheaded that march. But other than that, as far as stuff that was put out over the airwaves, oh, never. It was never any fear. I had control over the content. I had control over the mic. So anything that went out over the air, you know, we had a delay. You know, we had a delay on the system. So if something was said that was inappropriate, we could always push the button and dump it. So, and then later on in my career, I started recording a lot of the shows because, you know, people would just be inappropriate. So as long as I'm being honest with myself and people weren't cursing and getting me in trouble with the FCC, you know, what was there to be afraid of?
Wow. Hey, y'all, this is Roddy Perry. You're tuning in to Roddy Perry Live. We're talking to Mr. Michael Bazin. You can check him out. He's very connected to social media. And I want to talk to you specifically about social media. You can go to the website. That's michaelbazin.com or bazinlive.com is one of his sites as well. Facebook, Michael Bazin Live. Or you can check him out on One Dream, One Team as well. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Mike, talk to me about social media, because I believe we have unprecedented access to the people that enjoy what we do than we've ever had. You can be found on Bazin Live across the board. Talk to me about being able to still communicate with your people.
It was huge. You know, we have more people joining us now on Bazin Live on Facebook and Twitter than we did when we were on the radio. And even Tyler Perry, who I love, he knows it, and respect Oprah, who I love and respect, we have more people talking about our page than they do, and they have 8 million followers, and I have close to 1 million followers. So even though they have 8 times the number of fans, we have sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 times the number of traffic. So,
right.
And that's because I'm engaging people on topics that allow people to have, you know, to go back and forth with each other and share this kind of stuff. So social media is huge. What you're doing is very important. I elected to promote my new book, Raise Your Hands If You Have Issues, on internet radio before I went to Celestial Radio. I'll be doing Steve Harvey's show tomorrow, but it was intentional that I start on internet radio because I wanted to give you all the publicity and, you know, give you the recognition and the type of exposure that you need and deserve, because I believe it's the only place we're going to have a voice at some point.
Man, and I got to be honest, Mike, and I know you love Rodney Perry, and I love you. But when they told me we got Bazin, I was like, what the hell? I'm like, Bazin ain't got to do my show. So I really appreciate it. But one thing I understand about you is you understand that things work from a grassroots level. I mean, you've built your career
Absolutely.
From a grassroots level, man, on so many levels. Let's go back. I'm talking to Michael Bazin, the author now, not Michael Bazin, the radio personality or philanthropist. You know, I know you wear a lot of hats. Let's talk to Michael Bazin, the author. God's Gift to Women, How Much Is One Night of Passion Really Worth? Started it all off. Take me through the progression of the books to today, and what do you want to accomplish with this book that's out now? Raise your hand if you have issues, because I think there's a lot of hands up right now.
And feet, okay? So I'll tell you like this. It started actually with Never Satisfied, How Why Men Cheat, back in 1995. That was my first book.
Wow.
And about 4 months after I released the book, I left my job working with the Chicago Transit Authority, called my mom, borrowed money from my mom and a couple of my coworkers, and I made that $3,000 you know, it turned into this media empire that I have now. But it started with the being fearless, as you said before, and believing in your dream and saying, no matter what happens, I'm going to make this work. Losing was never an option for me. So when I left that job with a 3-year-old daughter at the time, there was no doubt in my mind that I was going to be successful. Now, remember, or you may not know this story, is that I never wanted to be a relationship author. That was never my intention. I never wanted to get into a relationship. But I knew that if I wanted to get media attention, that I had to write about relationships because those are the authors I saw on the television shows.
Got
so
it.
I wrote a book first to get myself exposure, and then I wrote the novels, which is what I really wanted to write, which was Me and Cry in the Dark,
mm-hmm.
God's Gift to Women, The Maintenance Man Part 1, Maintenance Man Part 2. And that's how it started. I really wanted to make film, Rodney. I started out as a guy who wanted to adapt his books to movies the way Terry McMillan did.
Yeah.
So now, years later, we finally got the treatments done. Go ahead.
So let me ask you this, Mike. So what's your training? Did you take classes? How did you know you were a writer?
I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I was a guy. Let's look at Robin Williams as probably the best example for me.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Williams probably never taken an acting class. You know, Robin Williams was a stand-up comedian. He got a job on Mork and Mindy. He got an Academy Award nomination for Day of Poets Society, one of the deepest actors you'll ever see on film when Robin's doing his thing. Because acting and comedy is the same. It's timing, right? It's all timing.
Yeah.
Some people have great timing. Some people have gifted timing. He has gifted timing. I was a person that spoke very well. I'm a talker. That's what I do. I am a talker. I'm a speaker. So I found a way to write the way I talked. I just happened to be able to transfer my talking gift to a writing gift. So to me, they're one and the same. When I'm writing, people can hear it like it's very conversational. So I had no training at all in writing.
So the relationship lane was just a vehicle for you to really get to tell the stories you wanted to tell.
Exactly. That's, you nailed it right on the head. I never wanted to be a radio host. I never wanted to be a speaker. I wanted to be a guy who wrote great books that were adapted into movies. And it just goes to show you, man, that when you pursue one dream, it can turn into other dreams. And so once I got out there promoting my book at the Black Expo, because there was a big Black Expo tour going on back in 1995, that's how comedians, artists, people who had businesses, that's how you got your business out through these Black Expo tours that traveled all across the country.
Right.
And so I would have seminars at the Black Expos to promote my book. I didn't want to do a seminar at the Expo. I just wanted to sell my book. But I noticed when I did seminars, I sold hundreds of books. And when I just sat there at that table, hold the book in my hand, I'd be lucky to make a couple of $100. So I did the seminars out of necessity, and the radio interviews promoted the seminars. So I became very good at being on radio promoting my seminars. And, again, one dream led to another. Very
wow.
Okay.
And we've had a chance to watch all the dreams. You know, you and I have had conversations, man, and I just remember, you know, you going, Rod, man, I'm not a celebrity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually became a celebrity. How were you able to deal with that, being a guy that really didn't want that?
I still don't. And when I walk through the airport, I'm the guy with his head down because I'm not in it for that. That's why when the show ended, the way it ended, I thought very unprofessionally. But, you know, it's the business. My attitude was, you're not taking anything from me. And I tried to convey that to the people I was in business with, who I'm not going to mention because they're not important. I'm like, I'm not in love with money. I'm not in love with being on the air. I'm in love with people. So you can't take the people away from me because the people already know who I am. I can reach them on Facebook. I can still do my speaking events. I can still write my books. So you can't, you're not in between me and the people. So a lot of people don't understand that. They think that once they take your money, they take away your identity. Well, I was never about the money. You know how I was on my television show, which I never made any money off of. I never made a dime off of that television show, because that was my way of saying, let me show you what I can do, and then you pay me. Same thing with radio. I never made a dime off of radio in New York. I was number one in New York and wasn't making a dime. I did that show for free. I was number one in New York without a paycheck. And that's another lesson for a lot of people out there listening. Stop trying to get paid first. You know,
yeah.
Everybody wants the money. Pay me first. No, show me what you can do. Make yourself valuable, and then I'll pay you. And that's the way it should be.
Wow, man, that's so well said. I say this all the time, and I want to hear your take on this. People want what you have without doing what you did. Okay?
I like that.
People want what you have. Like, people look at a Michael Bazin or a Rodney Perry or anybody that's in the quote-unquote limelight, like, oh, man, I see you doing this, doing that. But you don't know what – you don't know that I work for free at KJLH for 4 years before I ever did any of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or before I did that, or before Michael Bazin became the Michael Bazin we know, he was driving on the CTA in Chicago. You know,
right.
Or he was writing, or the hours it takes to write a book, the months it takes for you to get it done. What is your process when it comes to writing?
Oh, lock the doors, dude. Grab some takeout and a lot of water, and sit your butt down there and become creative. You know, writing to write well is the most difficult thing in the world to do because it's just you and a blank screen or a blank piece of paper. You know,
mm-hmm.
and you have to make that paper come to life. You have to make people hear those voices. You have to move the story along in time. You have to create the place where they're talking. You got to make people care about the characters. So it's a very difficult thing to do well. I just had a gift for it. But to answer your question about people want what you want without doing what you did, you have to understand, for me, Rodney, being a writer is the most difficult thing in the world to do. You're trying to sell books to black people. Let's get real, Negro, okay?
Wow.
You're trying
Let's
to
go.
Sell
Let's go there.
Books to black people. So you have to understand that we're typically not readers. Let's just say what it is. You know, reading for most people in general is not a simple thing to do. People will prefer to watch a movie than to read a book. I mean, that's just how it is.
Now let me stop you right there, Mike, because you squashed that idea because you've been selling books for 2 decades.
Yeah, but you know, Rodney, I was good at selling myself.
Okay.
I was very good at selling myself, which made people interested in my books. And now let me just give credit to Terry McMillan for a second. Terry McMillan started a renaissance of black writers with Elin Harris, Eric Jerome Dickey. I mean, these are all my peers. B.B. Moore Campbell. I mean, these were a lot of people who were hot. We were hot. So Terry McMillan created that opportunity with Waiting to Exhale. And then Elin Harris came in with his incredible books. I miss Elin. God rest his soul. Another great friend of mine in the business, and Omar Tyree. I got to give Omar his love. It was a renaissance. Sometimes timing is everything, Rodney, and I came along at the right time. I saw the opportunity around the corner for a black male writer writing from a black man's or a man's perspective, not even a black man, but a man's perspective. So timing played a huge part in that success, and black bookstores played a tremendous part in my success, and they're all gone now.
Why is that, Mike? I mean, was it just not a viable business, or is it like you started to say, it's like, are we not reading?
We're not reading. I mean, there's no reason in the world these stores should have gone out of business. If we had supported them, of course you need great writers. You got to have great books for people to go into the stores and buy. But Barnes & Noble and now what? Borders is out of business.
Yeah.
So people in general are not reading, man. It's not just black people. I mean, that's why these big chains are going out of business.
Now, do you think it's the Kindles? It's not that they're not reading. It's that they're reading through different means. Is the days of going to buy a piece of hard book almost over?
It is. It is. It's definitely dying. I mean, 70% of the books that I sell are through electronic books. But we don't train our children to read. I mean, reading children come from reading parents.
Yeah.
So when you don't have parents who are reading. Excuse me, you're not going to have children who read, and then children don't turn into young adults who read. So I'm tired of getting emails from brothers in prison telling me your book was the first book I read from cover to cover. It shouldn't take a brother going to prison to read a book from cover to cover. So we're not being raised enough on books, and books are, I'm going to tell you, you got to read to lead, man. You have to. If you want to be successful, you have to study, especially if you want to be a leader in this community, a leader amongst our people, a leader in this country, a leader in this world. You have to be a reader. There's no way around it.
Let's talk about the current book, Raise Your Hand If You Have Issues. And I love the cover because it's diverse. the cover is diverse. I see a kid's hand. I see secrets, women, children, dating, being single, deadbeat dads, fear, divorce, self-esteem, infidelity, ego, marriage. What are these issues, and does everybody have them?
These are the Michael Basin Show issues. These are the issues that for 10 years, 5 days a week, 4 hours a day, we got down with the topics nobody else wanted to touch and nobody else has and nobody else will ever touch on live afternoon drive time mainstream radio. Because it's difficult for people to talk about things, number one, they don't have an interest in, number two, they don't have information about, and three, that they're afraid to reveal themselves. See, when you talk about things as a writer even as a comedian, dude, if you want to get real, you reveal things about yourself with your comedy, right?
Very true.
So I'm not afraid to talk about molestation. No, I haven't been molested, but I know people who have. I'm not afraid to talk about deadbeat dads. No, I'm not a deadbeat, but I know men who are. I'm not afraid to talk about being single. I've been single. I'm not afraid to talk about people who are jacking up their marriages. I jacked up mine. So, and, of course, the dream killers, because you and I and everybody else who's ever tried to be successful has had people try to kill their dream. So these are all our issues. And people, for whatever reason, don't want to admit they have issues. And how can you solve your problems if you don't admit you have one?
Wow. So are people raising their hands, man? Are you touring yet? Can people see, you know, go out? Because I've been to the Michael Basin Book Frenzy, and it's crazy. Are you out yet with this one?
Yeah, I mean, we just released it on Tuesday. As I said, we're going to do Steve's show tomorrow. We'll start hitting the TV shows. And I'm just going to do what I do best, man. That's to talk about the truth from how I see it and allow people to engage me. Because, see, that's the difference. You know, the one difference with me and a preacher is that the preacher doesn't have a microphone in the audience. I do. When I talk on radio, it's not just me talking amongst people. You listen to most radio. It's just them talking amongst each other.
Exactly.
If you go to a church, it's the pastor talking to the congregation. The one difference with the Michael Basin Show, and I say the Michael Basin Show because it's not just me, it's the staff, it's the listeners, it's the affiliates, is that people had a chance to tell us what they thought about what I just said. Because I'm not trying to be right, I'm just trying to engage you and challenge you to challenge me. So that's how we grow. We grow from challenging each other. And that's what's missing is engaging conversation that challenges people.
Wow, man. This is such a great chat. And these are my shows that do the best are when you get two men on the phone having real conversations. Are we better off as men now, or is it getting worse for us?
Hell no. Oh, man, let me tell you what our problem is as men. And we're not talking about all men. I'm talking about men in general because there's a lot of brothers holding it down, like myself, like you, like my brother, like my best friend, like my brother-in-law. I have a lot of great example of married men and men in committed relationships and men who are raising their families. But generally speaking, the level of maturity and responsibility with black men has hit rock bottom. Rock bottom. And I've never seen so many older men acting, talking, and dressing young. And that's a problem because women need to be challenged by men. And any real woman understands what I mean by that because a challenge is not a bad thing. It's something that makes you better, challenges you to be better. But when women are reading more than men, when women are traveling more than men, when women are owning more homes than men, when women are starting more businesses than men, when women are raising more kids than men, how are we challenging them when they're the ones with all the resources? And that's where we're at right now. The women are the ones holding the resources, and the men are falling behind, obviously for social reasons. All right, we know there's racism and all these other issues. But sometimes it's just a lack of responsibility and a lack of maturity, and we got to change that.
The name of the book is Raise Your Hand If You Have Issues. We're talking to Michael Basin. I'm going to throw a couple of phrases out. This was so funny to me when I read this. I'm allergic to negative people. Do you start itching, Mike?
I do. I break out in hives, man. And you know, it's a harsh thing to say, but you know as well as I do, when you're trying to reach the next level, you cannot tolerate and I mean this in the most passionate way I can to anybody who's listening, you cannot tolerate for 1 second negative energy. It's so difficult to manage the money issues, to manage the issues with your kids, the sick parents, the financial issues. You don't have time for people who take away from your energy. And negative people take away from your energy. They take away from your focus. So, yes, you should be allergic to them. We all should be.
I know. They give me the sneezes. Now, I think this is such a great, great statement. Being single is not a disease.
That's right.
Talk to me on that, dog. What does that mean, dog?
Well, we have to stop treating women especially because men, we get pat on the back for being single. It's like a badge of honor almost to be single as a man. But for a lot of women, for many women, I think for most women it's probably safe to say that people treat you like something is wrong with you. For example, when a man sees an attractive woman, and I write this at the beginning of the chapter, what's wrong with you that you're single? Well, what you may not realize is the reason why that woman may be single is that there's nothing wrong with her. And it's the woman who's in the relationship sometimes or in the bad relationship, she's the one with the issue. So nobody's examining the women who are unhappily married and unhappily in relationships. There's nothing wrong with her, but there's something wrong with the happily single woman who just chooses not to deal with the drama. So in order for any woman to be happily married, she's got to be happily single first. So why are you knocking the woman who's simply preparing for a good man or happy in the meantime is how I like to put it.
Yeah, I really subscribe to that concept, man, because if you're not a successful single, it's very difficult to be a successful member of a couple. Like,
you got that right.
If you don't know what you like, how can you communicate what you like? Whether it's from sex to, you know, managing money to if I want children, all of those questions, you have to have it at the very least contemplated, I think.
And even deeper still is the ability to create peace within your own life. If you can't create peace alone, it is impossible to be peaceful in a relationship. So that's the one thing that I find that many women who are single are mastering. They're mastering being happy and being content and having peace on their own. And I think that's a healthy thing.
We're talking to Mr. Michael Bazin. The name of the book is Raise Your Hand If You Have Issues. Now, if you didn't raise your hand, you're lying, and that's an issue. That's gangster to me.
I thought that was a great subtitle, man.
I love that. One last line I read, and I, you know, I'm married. I'm 17 years married. I'm not the same person you married.
Yeah.
That
is so true. How many people tell you, thank you, brother, and if one person who's going to co-sign on that more than anyone else is the person who's married because they know it's true. And nobody tells you that when you get married. Nobody ever tells people when you get married, by the way, both of you all are going to change. And then you have to find a way. That's the most complicated aspect of any marriage is to grow together. It is. Children come into play. Your careers come into play. Friends, family, other men, other women, right? I mean, it's just a part of life. The question is, can you evolve together? Can you mature together? Can you grow together? And I think for a lot of men and women, they can't. And it's not because they're not meant to. I just think they don't have the tools to know how to know that woman who maybe not was as sexual when she was younger has become very sexual. That man who was very quiet has become very outgoing now. Do you love each other enough? Do you value each other enough to find a way to work that out to stay together? Or, and this is the real tough part, and I talk about this in the book too, or have you grown out of each other and you just have to admit we're no longer compatible? You know how many people have their children leave home and then find out they have absolutely nothing in common after being together 10, 15, 20 years? It's amazing because you've been spending so much energy and time into raising those kids, you haven't put any energy and time into building your relationship, and you don't even know each other. But nobody tells you to keep track of those things. It's called checking in, and people don't check in to make sure their relationship is still on track. So once all the distractions are out of the way, they find that they're not only not on track, they're not even in the same area code, man. It's over.
Wow.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but you know what? That's very true. I got a friend of mine. He and his wife, like you said, they got all the kids up and out the house. One son went to military, daughter went off to college, and they were sitting in that house going, who are you? You know, And a year later, they were divorced. So you're absolutely right on that, man. What do you want to accomplish with this book, Mike?
I want to do what I always do, the thing I love doing most. And I'm going to get a little deep here because, you know, it's deeper than just having talks about relationships. It's having different talks. It's having a different talk about business. It's having a different talk about who's in our life. It's having a different talk about God, if you want to get deep about it. I love the movie Life of Pi. Those of you all who saw it may remember at the beginning of the film, the parents encouraged the young boy to pursue several different religions. And the one thing that I really enjoyed about that was watching this family support him in whatever direction he went, because they wanted him to think and learn to think for himself and evolve in his own way. And I think that's the problem with what we have going on in society, man. We're trying to guide our children. We're trying to guide each other. We're trying to control each other too much, instead of allowing each other to grow in a way that's very natural and very healthy. So this book is designed for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to open dialogue for people to challenge each other to think, because that's something we're not doing. We're doing a lot of feeling. We feel in church. We feel in our relationships. But we don't think things through, and that's why we end up in the relationships that are unhealthy. So thanks for having me, man, to talk about it.
Hey, man. Hey Mike, I can't thank you enough. The name of the book is, of course, Raise Your Hand If You Have Issues. And, you know, if you're not on the Michael Bazin reading bandwagon, please do yourself a service because, man, all of the books are incredible. Your body of work is noteworthy. Again, as a fan, I thank you for your service to us on the radio for those years. And, hey, you did like I did when Monique's show went away. I went and did what I do. You know, I tell jokes.
That's right.
You know, so I was like, I said this. I said, we got another book coming within 2 months. I knew it. Because we do
That's
what
I
do, man. So again, man, thank you, man. I can't wait to see your face, Mike, man. It's been a blessing. And again, man, I look.
Once again, thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. That's our show. Once again, thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. That's our show for today. Check us out next Monday, 2 p.m. We are doing it. This is Rodney Perry. You're tuned in to Rodney Perry Live. Once again, thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. That's our show for today. Check us out next Monday, 2 p.m. We are doing it. This is Rodney Perry. You're tuned in to Rodney Perry Live.